accession number 22065, real 8.
Excuse me. Dennis Avey, real 8.
Yeah, we decided on this international match, and as I said, it was England, Scotland, Wales, and South Africa. Now, we knew the strength of all our footballers, more or less, by what we talked about and what have you, and we affected reasonably equal teams. I played for the South Africans. There were only two of us, two South Africans, actually representative of South Africa, but nevertheless it balanced very, very well, and we played these matches. Outside the camp, they gave us vests, which we dyed ourselves. We found the dye to dye these different colours, you know. And football boots they gave us. God knows where they got them from, I don't know. They weren't all the correct size in, but near enough, you know. And they played immediately outside the barbed wire. We played, they had a field constructed there, goalposts and what have you. And all the chappies in the camp could see from inside the wire. But there were machine guns at each corner and guards. And only the teams came out. A lot of the engineers, the management came in from Ego Farben, together with some German officers and what have you, and they used to be the spectators. Anyway, we had some marvellous matches. We had four marvellous matches. And then they photographed us. I've got a photograph now. And I say, how on earth did I look so damnably healthy? And I think they must have airbrushed them. I don't know. But we looked absolutely 100% fit. But I must say, we were fit to a degree. I mean, to do all this work, and you're getting muscles on your elbows, never mind about anything else. So that was it. And I am sure that was all done to propaganda. These photographs taken and everything. And I'm absolutely sure they used them to that end. Well, all this went on, this terrifying... I did go on about this. I did tell you about Ernst, didn't I? And when, yes. I did some type of this exchange and got all this information and wrote to his... Well, I didn't write to his sister. My mother wrote to his sister. And that was it. And I got cigarettes to him. And he was over the moon. It saved his life, I think, because he was able to, in turn, exchange cigarettes for everything else, you know, food and what have you. Well, I'll come back. And this daily turn in Ige was as such. There were situations every day. I remember one time we were being marched back at night and we'd stopped for some unknown reason. And an SS woman had got hold of this poor Stripey. He was as weak as anything. And he must have said something to her. He was a Polish Stripey. And she had leather gloves and what have you. And she struck him round the neck and put him right on the floor. And she screamed at him, and she stood astride him, picked a rock up above her head like that. I saw this, and pushed it down on his head, smashed his head to smithereens. That was the sort of thing that was going on there, without anything at all. I can tell you, this girl I was referring to that gave me this information, this Pauline, she was from the Ukraine, and she was a very educated girl as well, comparatively. She came from Batum originally, by, on the Black Sea. And she used to give me this information. I used to meet her in a boiler house. And it was two boilermen there. And they knew me, and they used to keep caviar for me. And they even, at the back of the boiler house, there were corrugated iron sheets. And they even loosened one up, so that should anything develop, I could get out of the back there quite easily, which on two occasions it did. And I was okay. She was all right, because she had to take reports from the boiler house, or bring reports back from them on heating and what supplies they wanted, coal and stuff like that for the boilers. And that was it. And that's why, but she did move. I never did know what happened to her. I think she must have been killed. Anyway, that's not the point. The point was every day there was always something happening. And then one day, the lads, as far as I can remember, were going to organise a gala day. It was some basic thing of, I don't know what it was exactly. It was amusements and what have you. It was something to try and elevate the situation there anyway. There were some good chaps there, very good bloke chaps, organisers as well. And we're about to go into this on this particular day. It was in August. And there was an air raid. And they used to finable. They used to light these fog makers. They used to make fog. And unfortunately, the wind took all the fog away from our side of the premises of Ege Farm. But that wasn't the point. The Americans came over with bombers, and they bombed hell out of the factory. And unfortunately, one stick of bombs fell, and fell on the end of what can be termed an air raid shelter that our chaps were in. Now, there's been stupid reports about this, that the men were outside and the Germans were trying to usher them into air raid shelters. Would you believe this? Usher them in to keep them safe from the bombs. Ridiculous, absolutely. The end of this air raid shelter was hit and all the concrete and everything came in on them. And that was terrible. And somebody was shouting about for miners or engineers and what have you. Well, one chap came forward, but he was hopeless, and I got him out of the way. And I was pretty useful on stuff like that. I could see things pretty well. And I organised, and I went down and got all this rock shifted. There were tons of it. And there were people up above with ropes and Lord knows what, lifting all these concrete slabs away and Lord knows what. And as we came to a dead body, you know, we were bringing them out and God knows. Anyway, suffice to say there was 38 of them killed.
And they were British POWs?
All British POWs. Now, this particular bomb shelter or air raid shelter was built for Germans originally. Then the Russian POWs, this is what we were told by the civilians, the Russian POWs had this area and they worked them to death there. They gave them very little food. And because of their commitment, their inability to do any work at all, they said, I had no proof about it, they used this air raid shelter to put them in, locked the steel doors, and put the Cyclone B in through the top, and they gassed them. That was what was told me on a number of occasions by Polish civilians. Now, whether there was any truth in it or not, I don't know. Anyway, suffice to say, we got these chaps out, and there's one bloke I got out right from the very bottom. I think the Lord must have been with him. How he survived that, I do not know to this day. And he complained bitterly, and I'd climbed in this tunnel I'd made to him, and he was complaining bitterly because I took some water in for him and dropped it on his face, and he was complaining about this water being all over him. You know, I can't believe it at all. Anyway, we got him out. Well, there were 38 killed, as I said, and they put them in as best they could into blankets and what have you. And I was the prime mover, oddly enough, in digging the grave for them and burying them. And there were six of us. And this was done in Auschwitz Cemetery. We dug the grave, and I was together with four other people down at the bottom and just bringing them in and laying them in the grave. Then we buried them, and that was it. Apparently, 2 months after that, the grave was hit again because there was no end of bombing going on daily, virtually, by the super fortresses, you know, the Americans, and apparently blown it up. And they were reburied, apparently. They were reburied there. And then after the war, in July, after the war, what was left of them was reburied in Krakow, in the Krakow Cemetery. And I found out Rubici Cemetery. And I've now ascertained that there's 14 people missing. There's no bodies at all. They've been completely... Anyhow, I'll go on from there because it worried me. It always worried me, this. I always worried about where they were. I didn't know where they were. And we didn't hear that it had been rebombed. But I then started, only quite recent, comparatively recently, a few years ago, started to inquire. And I got hold of the MOD. I got hold of the War Graves Commission, first of all. I couldn't remember a lot of their names, and they couldn't tell me. So I went to the MOD. They were most adamant in their helpfulness. They thought, yes, definitely, we're fine now. I never heard that much. Absolutely zilch. Anyhow, what I did, I got in touch with, what's his name?
James Taylor.
James Taylor. He gave me this lady to write to, which I did do, in Auschwitz Museum. She got in touch with a doctor that works there, and he eventually gave me the information that he got from civilians, all this information he got from Polish civilians that witnessed our burial of these chaps. And then he then told me exactly what had happened. This is how I know the grave was bombed and the bodies what were remaining. And I got hold of all those names. I had to pay for a register of War Graves Commission. I had to pay for that. And I found this out and I analysed it and eliminated it, and I found all those chappies' graves, each individual grave, and I found exactly the location of them. A lot of them were mass graved, but nevertheless I found the location of them in Krakow. And that's how I know there's 14 bodies that weren't accounted for. and I'm in process of writing to the MOD now to tell them exactly what I've ascertained and exactly how much help they gave me. And that was it. And since then, I've been to and fromming with Auschwitz, with this doctor. And he's writing, not a thesis on it, but whatever it is. And he's writing a book on it, etc., etc., etc. And he wants all the information which I've given him. I've given him an awful lot of information on exactly all these chaps and what happened in Auschwitz itself. And he was delighted, you know, absolutely delighted. And I said, well, one of these days I would like, although I don't want to, I would like to go back and exorcise a lot of pain. Because, and I think I mentioned it before, I think part of me died there without any doubt at all. And if only it will exorcise that, or exorcise something, it could well do. And he said, well, I'll be delighted to meet you. And he said, I'll show you around the museum. I'll take you to where the camp was. I'll take you to where Ige Farben was, etc., etc., etc. And he sent me drawings and things like that of the exact position and position of the gates and everything. So he's got a lot of information on there, and hopefully if I get the money together, you know, I'll go back there, because he's offered to take me around the museum and let me look at a lot of statements and things that were made there, and people I knew that were killed.
Your camp, as you were saying, you know, you were moved very near your workplace.
Yes, yes.
And you went into Birkenau.
Oh, I went into Birkenau.
What was that like?
It was
Birkenau,
ghastly.
Compared with your camp.
Oh, it was It was the same sort of hutment, but very much more tighter. The sleeping arrangements was just purely on a flat bed, three levels. God knows how they used to get up to the top level. I don't know. They didn't have the strength virtually to do that in some cases. I think what they must have done, put the fittest on the top and then gradually work down, I don't know. They used to work in common level, off the ground, admitted. And it was stench. He smelled of death all the time. I should never, always remember that. And of course, they had lice, no end of lice, you know, on them all the time, and hunger and things like that. And of course, when this chappie I exchanged with got to, he was ill for some time after that because he had so much food, you know. They'd given him so much food because one or two knew exactly what was going on. And they looked after him when he was in Monowitz, E715, looked after him, fed him right up, you know, and kept him overnight. And then we exchanged them the next day. I was in there twice. And the third time, I didn't go, and it was just as well I didn't, really, because things were hiding up there. And the whole thing was to discuss things with him, find out the treatment and what was happening. Now, he told me of an Australian POW that was working in Birkenau. And sure enough, he did. I tried constantly to contact him. I couldn't. I don't know why, I couldn't. And do you know what he did? He was an escaped POW. They picked him up just going into Switzerland. And they interrogated him. Obviously, he was in civilian clothes. They wanted to know how he got the clothes, how he got the maps, how he got the compasses, and he wouldn't tell them. And he's like my temperament. He's an Australian to boot as well. And, of course, he caused a lot of problems. And they beat him badly. And then they sent him to Auschwitz, to Birkenau. Mm-hmm. Do you know what he did? He stoked the crematoria. And he stoked the crematoria for 12 months. I tried to contact him after the war, I couldn't, but then I found out that he had written a book called Stoker. And I found out the publishers of it and couldn't get it. I phoned the publishing company, they said they couldn't get it, it'd run out of this and that. And oddly enough, and coincidentally, I was asking about the publishers at Smith's, the book people, you know. And this lady happened to be talking to the manageress and said I was asking for this book. And she then said, well, what do you want this book for? And then she told me that I was in Auschwitz. I had to tell her this. And she said, oh, my father would love to meet him and possibly help him. So, to cut a long story short, it was a Colonel Arkell. And I went to see him, we had luncheon with him. I took Audrey and we had a lovely lunch with him. And would you believe it, after all the length of time, his sister went out to Australia and she went many days and weeks, possibly, finding this book. And she got me this book. And as a result of that...
Yes, or show me later, yes.
Pardon?
Show me later.
Yes, yes, I will do. And the book is real bad reading. Real bad reading. Yeah, a lot of people wouldn't believe it. Well, they won't. They didn't. They didn't believe anything. And that was it. However, that was Auschwitz, and then... came after the many, many months, and finally came the crunch.
Before you tell me about that, I think you said earlier that there was an incident you were going to tell me about with the Wehrmacht. Is that right? You were saying the Wehrmacht treated you relatively more
relatively
kindly.
Well, yes. Really.
Mm-hmm. Were you going to say something about your treatment?
No, the Waffen-SS, they were the main guards inside Egerfarben. They were the horrible... Their treatment was beyond the pale, you know. But the Wehrmacht, they were very few and far on the ground. But they were reasonable chaps, and they'd been to the Eastern Front as well. And so they... I suppose they were quite sympathetic in one way or t'other. They didn't always show it, mark you. There's only certain individuals. But, you know, one becomes very selective as one studies the psyche of the German. I've repeated myself, I know. But I realised I had to do that because they can have... You can manipulate them to a certain point and then you know... Then you're in the minus country then. And that's it. No, that was it. I think relatively our treatment by the Wehrmacht was pretty reasonable as a size to what the Waffen-SS.
Have you had any pay for your labour with Farben's?
No. That was a point. There was supposed to be Lagergeld. As they said in these reports I've seen subsequent to the war. Well, I don't know where all this Lagergeld was to be spent. They said in reports I've read subsequently that was submitted to me from the MOD that we had canteens and this and that and anything we could buy with this Lagergeld. It was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And this Lagergeld, I found out generally, was ludicrous in a lot of different areas because they had nothing to buy. They could buy ladies' hair dye or lipstick and things like that, that's all. Nothing. This is ludicrous. And this Lagergeld was non. In point of fact, that reminds me, on one occasion, I went absolutely ballistic on one of the contractor's bosses, who was a nasty little man, I can see him. And he was jumping up and down, and I was telling him about this extra work we were doing on Sundays, you know, these long Sundays, and one in three off. I said, we want paying for all this, you know. And I told him he was not a twister. But it's a very derogatory statement in German that I didn't truly realise the significance of. And it was more than a twister. He was a criminal to boot and what have you. And I didn't realise the significance of this colloquialism as such. And I told him, and it was an eruption. Oh, he had the guards round, and there was hell to pay over that one. But there was no Lagergeld as such. Now, I know that there was £1 million set aside after the war by the Germans to more or less support this Lagergeld. In other words, Lagergeld that wasn't spent or couldn't be spent or what have you. Now, successive governments have never told us this, but we found this out. And this Lagergeld, this 1 million now, on today's assessment, would be up around 130 million, 140 million, something like that. And not a penny has been paid to anybody. And I've asked this in Parliament, as a question to Parliament. Where is it? I haven't received a reply yet. What's happened? I've asked them a lot of things, incidentally, of letters I will show you. And that's never been done. That's never been given at all. Now, there's an IMO that's been established to pay for a Nazi persecution.
What is an IMO?
Now, I'll have to bring the papers out to show you exactly.
But this is a promise, is it?
Well, it's an application. It's specifically not for prisoners of war, but anyone that's been put as into slave labour. And we've differentiated with that, and accordingly, we've got forms up. I say we, two or three of us, forms up. That's the only number of people that are alive from one of it. To make an application that's going to be adjudicated in August this year of whether or not we come under this sort of heading, as slave labour, which I'm sure we do entirely. But what it amounts to is between £2,000 and £5,000, which is ludicrous. I want to know what the reparations are in true content. That's what I would like to know. I mean, the poor devils of Japan only got 10,000. They went through hell. My cousin was bayoneted on the Burma Railway, and I knew what went on there. And they've only just got the £10,000 now, to this day, after all this length of time. And as I wrote to Blair and told him, I said, I was on about this 75 pence that we got as old age pensioners. I said, do you realise that old age pensioners today were the people that fought for this country in 1939 and did all the civil work in 1939 that made it possible for this country, this great country of ours, to be free, and for people like you to live. And I said, that's all you've done. give those people 75 pence. Thank you very much indeed. If this is all you think of people and of your lives, and I said, whilst in Auschwitz, I managed to get hold of papers, newspapers, and I used to read them very avidly, and a lot of rubbish they were.
These were German, were they?
German newspapers. And one paper I got was the Beobachter Zeitung. And in it was an edict that was made by the SSHQ. And it was a false statement. And it said, when we win this war, we will rule from Whitehall.